Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone. Tom Hartman.
Well, I would say the election has gone full tilt boogie. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom in the American way. George Bush, not a believer in peace, in freedom, or the American way. Willing to absolutely demagogue this stuff, and of course, this is just something that is going to be loved by the Reich. George Bush speaking before the Knesset just moments ago. Let's just first put this in context. Harry Truman met with Stalin. Richard Nixon, as we were having, you know, the very real possibility of war with China, particularly as we bombed Cambodia and we were getting closer and closer to China, Richard Nixon met with the Chinese first in secret, when he first became president, in fact. He met with the Chinese in secret, and then publicly he went to China. And it has led to arguably an opening of China. I know I regularly bash China on this program for being a communist, tyrannical dictatorship. They are. But, hey, it's a whole heck of a lot better than it was under Chairman Mao. And I think, frankly, we can thank Richard Nixon for some of that. And large parts of China are moving very much in the right direction. The Vietnamese, Nixon met with the Vietnamese. Reagan met with Gorbachev. The country that had 10,000 nuclear weapons pointed at us. Now Bush is all hysterical about the fact that Iran is enriching uranium up to 3.5% so that they can fuel the nuclear reactors that we sold them under the Reagan and Bush administrations, that they're going to be able to produce nuclear power. And he's all hysterical about this. And, and Barack Obama says, I'll talk to them. I will talk with our enemies. That's what you do. That's what statesmen do. But Bush is so confined in this little, tiny, terrified, mini-me worldview. This, I'm so afraid. I can't talk to anybody who I don't agree with. I mean, that is the essence of what Bush is saying. And he's wrapping it in the language of pandering, demagoguery. Speaking before the Knesset, before an audience of people who probably some of them Holocaust survivors, certainly many of them the relatives of Holocaust survivors, a nation that of all the nations in the world is probably the most sensitive to the horrors of the Nazis, and invoking the Nazis to indirectly point to Barack Obama, Richard Nixon. George W. Bush.
As Nazi tanks crossed into Poland in 19...
Let's start that over. As Nazi tanks, that's how he says.
As Nazi tanks crossed into Poland in 1939, an American senator declared, Lord, if I could only have talked to Hitler, all this might have been avoided. We have an obligation to call this what it is. The false comfort of appeasement, which has been repeatedly discredited by history.
Now, it's actually been repeatedly established by history. And, I'm not frankly sure. In fact, I would say in all probability, if a U.S. senator had talked to Hitler in 1939 or 1938 or 1937, that it wouldn't have stopped him. Hitler was plain old, flat out, bat-wing crazy. As were the followers. I mean, Nazism was a cult. And that was one of the things that we failed to recognize early on, was that it was a cult. It was a cult like Pol Pot's cult. It was a cult like, like Osama bin Laden's cult to some extent. I mean, Nazism was a cult. But nonetheless, here we have a long history of American presidents. I would submit to you it's a history of American presidents going all the way back to Washington. I am sure that probably, over the Daily Kos within the next hour, somebody who has bothered to study history will have a long list of all the presidents of the United States going back to the beginning who have talked with our, quote, enemies, end quote. I mean, even during the Revolutionary War, we were talking with England. You don't talk to your enemies. I mean, this is the worst, the absolute worst kind of demagoguery. It's the old saying, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. I mean, Reagan didn't just talk to Brezhnev. He talked to Yuri Andropov. He talked to Chernenko. He told each of them this from Melvin Loeffler in the New York Times. It's actually republished in the Los Angeles Times. That he told each of them, notwithstanding the differences between the United States and the USSR, there was much to talk about. Common problems could be discussed across the ideological chasm. The fact that neither of us likes the... This is from a quote by Ronald Reagan in 1984. The fact that neither of us likes the other is no reason to refuse to talk. Living in this nuclear age makes it imperative that we do talk. So this morning, George W. Bush repudiating the Reagan Doctrine. Now, are the Republicans and repudiating the Eisenhower Doctrine, how Eisenhower ended the Korean War by talking with Stalin and the Chinese, how Nixon opened up China, is basically repudiating the history, the entire history of the Republican Party, and for that matter, the Democratic Party, the American way. Barack Obama saying, you know, this is sad. This is sad. And I think that that's, at the very least, a very strong, you know, not necessarily even the strongest way to say it, but it is the Obama way of saying it. I mean, I am so impressed. This guy is like a statesman. That's the kind of thing that you would expect John Kennedy to say. Saddened that Bush would use an opportunity to speak before the Israeli Knesset to make a partisan political point for an upcoming election in the United States. Well, I would say, you know, Barack Obama being a statesman, I'm a talk show host, I would say it goes beyond sad. I would say this is filthy. This is pathetic. This is the equivalent of Dick Cheney before the 2004 election saying, you know, if you vote for a Democrat, they're going to hit us again. Bush saying essentially the same thing day before yesterday in another interview with, I think it was Politico, where he said, well, if the Democrats get in, you know, they're going to pull out of Iraq and that's going to embolden the terrorists and they're going to hit us again. I mean, at what point does the world and America in particular say, enough already, Mr. Bush, we've got it. You're a terrified little man. You know, it's all
about... Be afraid,
about, yeah.
September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet
Bush's
morning.
Speech before the RNC in 2004... Danger.
Doom killers. Be afraid. The world will drift toward tragedy. May God bless you. Evil God. Iraq. Darkness. The continuing.
These are just clips in series out of Bush's speech before the RNC in 2004.
On the offensive, striking terrorists abroad, and nothing will hold us back. And we will prevail. Be afraid. God bless America. Nuclear weapons. Iraq was a gathering threat.
You get it. You go back to Mark Crispin Miller's book. And the Bush dyslexicon, and he pointed out that whenever Bush was talking about terror, whenever he was talking about fear, whenever he was talking about hatred,
the Almighty God, the dictator,
whenever he was talking about anger, whenever he was talking about vengeance,
various terrorist enemies we are facing in Iraq,
he became very articulate.
In Afghanistan and Iraq, the resurrection, Saddam Hussein's secret.
Then, but when it came time for Bush to talk about things like Social Security, like the needs of people in America, like the fact that almost as many people died in Hurricane Katrina as in 9/11, and we can lay that at the feet of the Bush administration while he was out cutting cake with John McCain, suddenly Bush becomes inarticulate, and he doesn't speak so well, and he stumbles over his words, and he fumbles, and he. It's just not in his language. It's all about hatred for George W. Bush. And so many of the Republicans in his tragic, tiny little Republican hate group. America is ready to move beyond hatred. America is ready to move beyond fear. This isn't, by the way, a message unique to Barack Obama. I would submit to you that Hillary Clinton, to a large extent, has been saying the same thing. Democrats right across the board are saying the same thing. Certainly John Edwards was talking about this yesterday in the town that I was born in, Grand Rapids, Michigan, where we're on the air right now on WTKG. Hey, guys in Grand Rapids, you were the lucky ones yesterday. John Edwards showing up and endorsing Barack Obama. America's ready to move beyond George W. Bush's pathetic small-minded, terrified, wimpy little politics of fear and ready to move on to the world stage and say, hey, we're Americans. We're not afraid.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And fear itself is the only thing Bush has.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. The Tom Hartman Program.
Say that Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town, with political connections to spread his wealth around. Born into society, a banker's only child, he had everything a man could want: power, grace, and style. But I work in his factory, and I curse the life I'm living, and I curse...
21 minutes past the hour, Barack Obama responding to Bush. He says this is sad that President Bush would use a speech to the Knesset on the 60th anniversary of Israel's independence to launch a false political attack. It is time to turn the page on 8 years of policies that have strengthened Iran and failed to secure America or our ally Israel. Instead of tough talk and no action, we need to do what Kennedy, Nixon, and Reagan did and use all elements of American power, including tough, principled, and direct diplomacy, to pressure countries like Iran and Syria. George Bush knows that I have never supported engagement and with terrorists, and the president's extraordinary politicization of foreign policy and the politics of fear do nothing to secure the American people or our stalwart ally, Israel. 866-303-2270, our phone number. John, and it's interesting the mix of callers here. John in Ohio, you want to say that Obama and the Democrats are like Hitler? Do I read that right?
Oh, yes, to a T almost. You look at what you said, that they were caught. They were very unstoppable at the first. You know, when Chamberlain said, oh, we'll do this, do that, don't matter, we'll sign a treaty and he'll agree with it. There's no difference between them and Hitler than the Democratic Party, which... it's not a Democrat. Obama wouldn't know a Democrat.
Neville Chamberlain did not understand he did not understand Hitler. He did not understand the cult. The cult of Nazism was a death cult. It was
okay.
A cult of superiority. It was a cult Hitler's phrase, Erde und Blut, earth and blood. That the German people, the Aryan people specifically, to use Hitler's language, were thus the superior people of the world, were destined to rule the world, that only 1,000 years of peace predicted by the Bible could be brought about by the Nazis ruling the world. I mean, he was quite explicit about all this stuff. Chamberlain's mistake was not reading that, not getting that, not understanding that.
The exact same thing that the Socialist Party of this country does. You think that your intellect, these people's intellect, is so grand, so much superior, like he said about the people in Philadelphia.
What people?
Guns and religion. Oh, you don't understand because your intellect doesn't take you that far. The Democratic Party, the first thing that Hitler did was take away cigarettes, the ability to basically live your life the way you see it, books, guns, the whole nine yards, the exact pattern that the Democratic Party today
So the Democratic Party is burning books the way the Nazis were?
No. So what I'm saying is that what you should be reading.
The Democratic Party is putting education into the schools that say that children should be beaten the way that the Nazis did?
Our education today is pathetic compared to what it was 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Yeah, Republicans got a hold of it 30 years ago with Reagan, it's really gone downhill, hasn't it?
No, it got through the Democrats putting in these unions and these Jimmy Carter putting in the
The unions have been there since the 30s, sir, and the unions built public education in the United States through the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Reagan began dismantling public education in the 1980s. In fact, he put Bill Bennett in as the Secretary of Education because Bennett had called for the abolishment of the Department of Education.
And it should be abolished. It should be. There's a bureaucracy bunch of crap.
Oh, wait a minute. So you're saying, you know, education is falling apart, therefore we should destroy the educational system.
Well, I got a question for you. Since Jimmy Carter, he was never there before, and we put out the most brilliant people in this world.
John, let's get back.
I'm
sorry. China and India are both graduating a whole lot more engineers than we are right now.
John,
let me get back to your original point. Your original point was that
somehow
the Democrats are the same as Hitler. It sounded to me like what you said, that was that the Democrats were the same as Chamberlain.
It is. I mean, you look at what they just done with the polar bear. It's the first time in history.
With what? Polar bear?
Yeah. Hold on.
We're negotiating with polar bears?
Hold on. Let me finish. What I'm saying about a cult with these Green Party creeps and these tree-hugging idiots out there, it's the first time in history that they've brought this up. It's the first time in history that any animal that is successful will be probably put on the endangered species list. Okay? That makes all this comes down to is what the Green Party, I mean, what the Democratic Party has done or doing. They're completely abandoned.
So this is proof that the Democratic Party is like the Nazi death cult that murdered, you know, 6 million people internally and started a war that led to the death of, you know, some 20, 30, 40 million people.
It's not that
because
point
of polar
yet.
Bears.
Take it away. What the Nazi Party done was this. They thought they were so intellectually correct, so superior, that they started one thing at a time. And if you look at the pattern of the Democratic Party today, that's what they're doing. That's exactly what they're doing.
The
guns, cigarettes, freedoms. You
Party.
Name it, they're doing it right now to us.
They're doing it by opening up dialogue. They're doing it by trying to defend the Constitution. Wait a minute, it's the Republican Party that is saying that they can throw you in jail and you don't even have an opportunity to call a lawyer.
No, a lawyer's there for one reason. It's Dr. Matt. I got things with the Republican Party. Bush is an idiot.
Okay.
I voted for him, but he's still an idiot. Compared to Obama.
John, we found a point of agreement. I'm sorry we've hit the break at the bottom of the hour here, but I do appreciate your call, John, and thank you so much for listening to the program. Continue to do so. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Back in the 1950s, see, we've been here before. We've seen this movie before, this movie that George W. Bush is playing before the Knesset this morning. And my guess is that there are a number of people in Israel who are hearing his words and are shivering in horror, as is so much of the world right now. Milton Mayer, an American Jew, a writer in Chicago. This is in the 1950s. He wrote for one of the Chicago newspapers. In the 1950s, went over to Germany and befriended 10 average people. One of them was a college professor, one was a baker, one was a guy who worked in a factory. These were all Christians. They were all average Germans. None of them were politically active. None of them were, you know, I mean, a few of them had to join the party just to keep their jobs, but that was about it. And said, "What the hell were you doing? How could you have continued to go to work every day through the whole thing, all the way through the war? How is it possible that this country could have done what it did?" He wanted to get to know the average Germans. He came back, he wrote a book about it called They Thought They Were Free, which is still in print. In fact, it's my BuzzFlash book of the month from about 2 years ago. You can find it. You can easily Google that or find it probably over at the BuzzFlash.com website. And Milton Mayer, in his book, They Thought They Were Free, quotes a couple of these good Germans. Average Germans, people, you know, decent citizens, in quotes, people who just were there through the whole process. One of them said to him, what happened here? And now, as you listen to this, by the way, given our last caller, ask yourself, which party's ideology, philosophy, and tactics are we describing here in the United States? So this first guy said to him, what happened here in Germany in the 1930s and 40s, was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise. Now, remember leading up to the 2004 election, how Tom Ridge said, you know, the White House kept telling me to jack up the terror alert. I didn't know why. I didn't even agree with it, but I did it. He told David Letterman that. So anyhow, what happened here was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand, or so dangerous that even if the people could understand it, it couldn't be released because of national security. Another of the Germans that Mayer interviewed said, this separation of government from people, this widening of the gap, it took place so gradually and so insensibly, each step disguised, perhaps not even intentionally, as a temporary emergency measure or associated with true patriotic allegiance or with real social purposes. And all the crisis and reforms, and some of the reforms were real, so occupied the people that they did not see the slow motion underneath of the whole process of government growing remoter and remoter. To live in this process is absolutely not to be able to notice it. Please try to believe me. Unless one has a much greater degree of political awareness, acuity, than most of us ever had the occasion to develop. Each step was so small, so inconsequential, so well explained or on occasion regretted. Can you remember the Patriot Act? Can you remember the Protect America Act? Can you remember the Military Commissions Act? So well explained or on occasion regretted that unless one were detached from the whole process from the beginning, unless one understood what the whole thing was in principle, what all these little measures that no patriotic German could resent must one day lead to, unless one could see what it would lead to, one no more saw it developing from day to day than a farmer in his field sees his corn growing. Until one day it's over his head. Another one, a college professor, said to him, Pastor Niemöller, you know, the guy who said first they came for the Jews, etc. Pastor Niemöller spoke for the thousands and thousands of men like me when he spoke, and too modestly of himself, in my opinion. And he said that when the Nazis attacked the communists, he was a little uneasy, but after all, he was not a communist, and so he did nothing. And then they attacked the socialists, and he was a little uneasier, but still he was not a socialist, he did nothing. And then the schools, the press, the Jews, and so on. And he was always uneasy, but he still did nothing. And then they attacked the church, and he was a churchman, and he did something, but it was too late. You see, this is this college professor speaking to Milton Mayer. He says, you see, one doesn't exactly see where or how to move. Believe me, this is true. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for the one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when the shock comes, will join with you in resisting somehow. You don't want to act or even talk alone. You don't want to go out of your way to make trouble. I mean, why not? Well, you're not in the habit of doing it. And it's not just fear of standing alone that restrains you. It's also genuine uncertainty. Uncertainty is a very important factor. And instead of decreasing as time goes on, it grows. Outside, in the streets, in the general community, everyone seems happy. One hears no protests, certainly sees none. You know, in France or Italy, there's slogans against the government painted on the walls and fences. In Germany, outside the great cities, maybe, but there's not even this so much. In the university community, in my own community, you speak privately to your colleagues, some of who certainly feel as you do. But what do they say? They say, oh, it's not so bad. You're seeing things. You're an alarmist. and you are an alarmist. You are saying this must lead to that, but you can't prove it. These are the beginnings, yes, but how do you know for sure when you don't know the end? How do you know or even surmise the end? On the one hand, your enemies, the law, the regime, the party, they intimidate you. On the other, your colleagues poo-poo you as being pessimistic or even neurotic. But that one great shocking occasion, that one moment when tens or hundreds of thousands of people will come out in the street and join with you, it never comes. That's the difficulty. If the last and worst act of the Nazi regime had come immediately after the first and smallest, thousands, yes, millions would have been sufficiently shocked. If, let us say, the gassing of the Jews in 43 had come immediately after the German firm stickers in the windows of non-Jewish shops in 33. But, of course, this isn't the way it happened. In between came all the hundreds of little steps, some of them imperceptible, each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next step. Step C isn't so much worse than step B, and if you didn't make a stand at step B, why should you at step C, and so on to step D. And one day, too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible of them, all rush in on you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy, and some minor incident, in my case it was my little boy, hardly more than a baby, saying, "Jew, swine," it all collapses at once, and you see that everything, everything has changed, and changed completely under your nose. The world you live in, your nation, your people, it's not the world you were in at all. The forms are all there. They're all untouched. They're all reassuring. The houses, the shops, the jobs, the mealtimes, the visits, the concerts, the cinema, the holidays. But the spirit, which you never noticed because you made the lifelong mistake of identifying it with the forms, the spirit is changed. Now you live in a world of fear and hate. And the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves. When everyone is transformed, no one is transformed. Now you live in a system which rules without responsibility even to God. I do not see even now how we could have stopped it. Many, many times since it all happened, I have pondered that pair of great maxims, Principis obsista and finia respis, resist the beginnings and consider the end, but one must foresee the end in order to resist or even see the beginnings. One must foresee the end clearly and certainly. And how is this to be done? By ordinary men, or even by extraordinary men. And here we have George W. Bush, the man who has said it's okay to spy on Americans. A little creepy thing, a little creeping thing. Yeah, oh yeah, be afraid of that anthrax in Washington, D.C. that brought us the Patriot Act, but you know, we're not really going to investigate that. And we're not really going to look into everything that happened around 9/11. And, you know, the Military Commissions Act, yeah, back in the 1870s after the Civil War, Congress did pass this law, the Posse Comitatus Act, which said that the American army will never again be turned on the American people. Well, let's repeal that. It's just a small thing, but let's repeal it. And let's bring in some private mercenaries. You recall the brown shirts were private mercenaries. Let's bring in some private mercenaries and try them out in New Orleans and see how it works. And that idea of habeas corpus, that you have the right to actually be charged with a crime and to know what the charges are against you, that you have the right to face your accuser, that you have the right to post bail, that you have the right to a speedy trial by jury, that those rights of habeas corpus that are enshrined not just in the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 8th amendments of the Constitution, but twice in the Constitution itself, well, we'll just take that out. With the Military Commissions Act. We'll just set it aside. Each of these small things. The Nazis were invoked today by George W. Bush. I've avoided comparisons between Bush and the Nazis because it has always seemed to me somewhat hyperbolic. And in many ways it is. I don't see, you know, 6 million Jews being gassed, or anybody else being gassed in the United States by this administration. But the direction, the spirit, the form, the techniques, they are all there now.
Tom Hartman. Speaking the truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And the sign said, everybody welcome, come in, kneel down and pray. So they passed around a plate at the end of it all, but I didn't have a penny to pay. So I got me a pencil and a paper, and I wrote my own little sign. It said, thank you, Lord, for thinking of me. I'm alive and doing fine. Yeah. Signs, signs everywhere, a sign. Logging out the scenery, breaking my mind. Do this.
Here we have Joe Lieberman on national TV after Bill, or on national radio rather, Bill Bennett says, you know that Hillary Clinton, she wants to bomb Iran. That's kind of cool. And Joe's like, yeah, my kind of woman. And frankly, it's a mischaracterization, I think, of Clinton by Bennett. But nonetheless, Joe Lieberman going down that road. And then you've got George W. Bush conflating Barack Obama with Neville Chamberlain. He actually quoted an American senator of unnamed quote. But, I mean, this is tragic. This is tragic. Catherine, Ann Arbor, Michigan, listening to WDTW. Hey, Catherine, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call. And I want to say that I love your show, and I've learned so much since I've started listening to you.
Thank you.
I think that last caller was a perfect example of the systematic propagandizing of Americans by a right-wing hate radio and also the mainstream media. He is a man who is filled with hatred for his fellow Americans. And he, it reminds me of something you said a while ago where you said that the genocide between the Hutus and the Tutsis was caused by right-wing hate radio.
It actually was, but the real cause of the genocide was a wide disparity in wealth. In fact, Tim Wentz's high school geography class in 1993 in Alliance, Nebraska, predicted, he had them look at disparities of wealth around the world and predict where the next genocide would be, and they predicted that the next one would be in Rwanda, and then after that, it would probably be in Burma. And they were looking at the Sudan. And sure enough, it happened like 6 months later, and he was horrified. He's now a member of Congress, actually, but he was the high school teacher in Alliance, Nebraska at the time. New York Times did a story on it a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, I think John has been brainwashed by hate radio. And I don't call it the mainstream media anymore. I call it corporate media in the United States. I think this program is the mainstream media. And I think many of the stations that carry this program and others like it are carrying the mainstream media. Although we're not so much doing news. I mean, if you want actual news mainstream media, I'd say watch Keith Olbermann's show, Countdown, or watch Amy Goodman's show, Democracy Now! I mean, those are the real news in the mainstream because they're talking about what's really going on, or the BBC News. But in America, what we have is corporate media. So, Kenny in Ohio. Hey, Kenny. Kenny, you're on the air.
Kenny, hello?
Yeah. Hey, you're on the air.
Yeah, Mr. Hartman, I wanted to ask you, don't you think it's kind of weird that George Bush is talking about going over to the Middle East, talking about peace, and yet he talks about not talking to our enemies?
Yeah, I do, and that's the whole point. Well said, Kenny. Bush does not talk about peace. Bush talks about war. Bush is not capable of talking about peace. As Mark Crispin Miller points out in his book, The Bush Lexicon, when Bush starts talking about things like peace, he starts, fumbling. Cynthia, and thanks for the call. Cynthia in Montana, you wanted to correct my numbers from World War II.
Yeah, the Nazis killed 12 million people in their concentration camps. Only 6 million of them were Jews.
Okay, yeah, they killed Catholics, they killed gypsies, they killed dissenters. They started out with the communists, as I recall, actually.
Yeah, they killed a million communists, and they also killed a total of a million called others.
Yeah, yeah, and disabled people, mentally retarded. I mean, the eugenics movement, Hitler's eugenics, thank you, Cynthia. Hitler's eugenics movement was actually, they used American 1920s eugenics posters and said, see, the Americans are doing it, we should be doing it here. Yeah, Trish in Spanaway, Washington. Hey, Trish. Trish.
Hey, Tom, are you there?
I am, and you are too.
Hey, I just wanted to respond to that guy that called us all a bunch of tree-hugging idiots. I grew up in Niagara County, New York, and there was a lot of, they didn't tell the public that they were doing a lot of Manhattan Project nuclear things there. The population back there has got the highest cancer rates. They're still dying. They're still covering up. It just
I understand, Trish, and you grew up there. Maybe you can tell me if this is right or if this is just one of those vanishing hitchhiker stories off the Internet. But I understand that one of the reasons why they're not filling potholes and doing major road repairs right now in parts of Niagara County, New York, is because the roads were made, the original fill for the roads was nuclear waste. And they're afraid of digging that stuff up and releasing it into the atmosphere.
I'm the one who sent that to you, Tom. Yes, that is happening right now, and they are still.
And there's a website devoted to that that the people of New York have put together. Can you tell me the URL for that website?
Yes, I can. It's www.artvoice.com. And get a hold of Lou. I forget his last name.
That's okay. Artvoice.com is a great start, and people can get over there and check it out. Trish, thanks a lot for the heads up, and it's pretty remarkable. By the way, just a reminder, our contest, we're going to be giving away an autographed copy of Cracking the Code, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore America's Original Vision today to the person who has the best post on today's blog at TomHartmann.com. And John in Ohio, you're back and have more to say? John?
Oh, yeah. What you said just a minute ago, you come out so poignantly said what you said a few minutes ago about the Nazis and the Republicans. You're right. I don't agree on the act that you were talking about a minute ago.
Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act. Okay.
But you said something about Bush listening on people. Well, the judges that wrote that said he was not breaking the law, and if he was breaking the law, Nancy Pelosi had already had it.
John, I gotta read you something here. By means, and just ask if you agree with this, by means of the liberal press, the liberals spread the colossal falsehood about American militarism throughout the world and try to inculpate America by every possible means, while at the same time, the Democratic Party refused to assent to measures that were necessary for the adequate training of our national defense forces. Would you agree with that statement?
Say that. I'm sorry. What now, sir?
Would you agree with that statement I just read?
Well, I think we should.
Yeah. Okay. I was looking for a yes or no, John. I'm sorry. It was actually from Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler. And you could replace the word liberal press with the word Jewish press. 57 minutes past that.
The Tom Hartmann Program. Tom Hartmann. Where smart people get their news. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, Tom Hartmann.
Well, you know, it was set in a movie by George Lucas, as I recall.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
And, occasionally when Dick Cheney has something to say, we'll play that clip as we're setting it up. But the reality is that there is a dark side to politics. There's a bizarre and frightening dark side to politics. And that dark side of politics in the United States, certainly we were talking about that in the last hour, that dark side of politics in the United States is, in the opinion of some, coarsening the discourse, the political discourse, poisoning the well, and actually changing our nation for the worse. Jeffrey Feldman has a PhD in cultural anthropology, which he applies broadly to the analysis of politics and communications. His previous book, Framing the Debate, is absolutely brilliant. His website, frameshopisopen.com. He has a new book out, Outright Barbarous, How the Violent Language of the Right Poisons American Democracy. Jeffrey Feldman, Dr. Jeffrey Feldman, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you back with us, Jeffrey.
That's great to be on.
So tell me, what is the title of your book, Outright Barbarous? That's pretty strong language.
It is strong language. It's actually a reference back to an essay by George Orwell that he wrote in reference to the state of political language earlier in the century. And I lifted that out in order to start a conversation about a really disturbing trend that's been happening amongst right-wing pundits. These are big pundits, people like Coulter, O'Reilly, Buchanan, Dinesh D'Souza. And what I've noticed is that since 9/11, they have been using a lot of violent metaphors in order to frame just about every single issue in American politics. And the broader argument, in its kind of most benign form, talks about liberals waging war against Christians, for example, in the work of John Gibson. But in its most kind of disturbing form, it argues that liberals have the same exact goals as the terrorists and that the U.S. government should be opening up a second front in the war on terror. And I draw
against liberals.
Against liberals, exactly. And I draw attention to this because at first when I was writing posts on the language of the right, I thought that maybe this was just a one-off instance, that there were a few articles out there in which this argument was being used. But when you look closely at what the right-wing pundits are doing in their books, these are not obscure books, these are bestsellers, and then you follow them onto their broadcast TV spots. And again, this is not just on Fox News, but also on mainstream shows, on MSNBC, CNN, and also on the networks, you find that these same ideas are getting out there into circulation, reaching millions and millions of viewers on a regular basis. So it's an important trend to draw attention to, particularly because in the last election and also in this election, it's these types of arguments start to show up on campaign trails, in the seats of government, people with real power.
Although George Bush invoked Nazism and Hitler this morning in a speech before the Knesset, let me go to a somewhat gentler for the people in the 40s who lived through it, I don't think that they would describe it that way, but perhaps a softer analogy. The tools of democracy, the tools by which people could challenge their government, the tools by which government power was limited, were systematically deconstructed in Spain and Italy, and in fact in Italy, arguably before they were in Germany, by Franco and in Spain and by Mussolini in Italy. And the consequence of that was this merger of corporate and state activity and this very, very toxic use of language that was always originally pointed at an external threat. The external threat at that time in the 30s, being Stalin and the communists and the Soviet Union. And then once that threat was identified and once the internal tools that protected the populace of the countries of Italy and Spain from their own government were stripped, the government turned its attention to the dissenters within those nations, and those dissenters were rounded up and they were put in prison, and they weren't they were vilified aggressively for a couple of years, but then they were rounded up, in many cases executed. And I don't think that we have to go as far as Nazi Germany to find analogies of times when freedom has been lost by democracies through the means that you're describing. Or am I being hyperbolic here, Jeffrey?
Well, I don't think you're being hyperbolic, but I would simply dwell a little bit longer on the damage that this types of discussions do to our democracy. A lot of people hear this type of critique and they think, well, this is just partisan politics. And in fact, it's actually the argument in Outright Barbarous is not that it's a problem to engage in strong critique of ideas from the left to the right, but that these violent ideas that get pushed out by these very prominent right-wing politicians and then brought into the mainstream discussion through their ties to corporate media, this is undermining a fundamental aspect of American democracy, what I call deliberative democracy in the book. And it's the idea that in order for our system of government to work effectively, we need to have a certain type of conversation that unfolds that allows people to get true information on a regular basis by means of the press. And when I say people, not just ordinary citizens, but also members of government, so that they can effectively understand what's going on and accomplish the pragmatic ends that we need to accomplish. When we have every single aspect of our national debate occupied by these violent conversations going on, that type of conversation is never allowed to unfold, and essentially we become cut off from the necessary information that we have. That is a very problematic development that happens in a system such as ours. Whether or not it bridges to actual violence waged against citizens, I think, is the next question and something that needs to be focused on. But this aspect of our debate being weakened, being undermined, the inability of citizens to know what's going on, and the inability of our government to function is really the crucial point that I focus on in the book, and is something that we all need to pay attention to.
One of the things I find fascinating is the way the corporate media is handling this. For example, on MSNBC, it's not uncommon. Chris Matthews, for example, will have Michelle Bernard, who is the head of the Independent Women's Forum, Carrie Lucas, who works for her as a regular on our program, and they are about as far right as you can get. I mean, it's far to the right of the Republican Party. He'll have Pat Buchanan on, who I heard give a speech when he was running for president, in which he referred to African Americans and Jews in the United States as those people and as those people who control our banking system. I mean, you know, all the worst stereotypes, and he really had the crowd whipped up about it. He'll have maybe one or two actual journalists who are sort of in the middle, and there's not a single liberal on the program. There's not a single Democrat even on the program, certainly not a progressive on the program. There's no and on those rare occasions when there might be a, quote, liberal talk show host, end quote, it's the most conservative, quote, liberal talk show host that you can find. And the whole thing, on the one hand, kind of creeps me out. On the other hand, I'm wondering, do you, as a student of this, as somebody with a PhD in cultural anthropology, the author of several books, we're talking with Jeffrey Feldman, by the way, his website, frameshopisopen.com, his new book, Outright Barbarous, his last book, Framing the Debate, they're all excellent, and I highly recommend all of them. Do you think that this is a phenomena of the corporatization of our media? I mean, how is it that these very, very toxic memes, and so many of the people promulgating them, are considered, quote, mainstream, end quote, when any reasonable analysis of the American public indicates that they're far out of the mainstream?
I think it is a product of the corporate media. You have a centralized control for political and commercial gain in very few hands of our media. So someone like Buchanan, who routinely publishes articles on his website predicting the genocide of the white race at the hands of Latinos and Middle Easterners, someone like Buchanan is able to be brought on to MSNBC, and he is camped out there constantly in public view because Buchanan provides that kind of blood in the water on a regular basis. That gets, you know, kind of whips up viewership.
Well, we do that on this show. I'll have the blood, you know, I'll have conservatives on a debate, but there's a liberal voice that's speaking back to them. It's mine. And I'm just not hearing that liberal voice anywhere in the corporate media. I mean, you know, the closest we get to it is Keith Olbermann with his periodic rants, his special comments, which last night's was absolutely brilliant. And by the way, God bless you, Keith, but he's the lone voice in the wilderness.
Yeah, I mean, there has been a cultural shift in the, you know, what I call the big pants media out there, kind of the big broadcast media,
the corporate media.
Yeah, the corporate media who really do believe that this focus on this conservative set of ideas under the guise of a balanced conversation, which of course is never balanced, as you pointed out, that is good for ad revenue, good for numbers, and that a general critique, oftentimes very aggressive of liberal ideas, is what brings in money.
Yeah. And I would submit to them that, you know, we're doing fine, thank you very much, and they should have more liberals on, but nonetheless. Jeffrey Feldman, his website, frameshopisopen.com, check it out. His new book, Outright Barbarous, How the Violent Language of the Right Poisons American Democracy. Jeffrey, as always, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, the true people's radio.
Tom Hartman.
Change. It's time for change in Washington, D.C. You can find out more at teamster.org. And just a quick reminder, tomorrow at 7 o'clock, I will be at Frugal Muse Books in Darien, in suburban Chicago. That's out at the southeast corner of 75th and Lamont Road in Darien. And 7 o'clock, I'll be giving a brief talk and signing books and saying hi to as many of you as drop by. And then on Saturday, Saturday the 17th at 1 p.m., I will be speaking. I'll be one of the keynote speakers on the main stage at the Chicago Green Festival, and that should be a hoot. And then after that, I'll be doing a book signing there as well. for the bookstore there at the Green Festival. So it should be a great weekend, and we'll be broadcasting our show live tomorrow from our Chicago affiliate, WCPT. So I'm much looking forward to it. And so far, Sean's found a couple of good comments on our blog on at our homepage at tomhartman.com. And we'll see who ends up at the end of the show winning the autographed copy of Cracking the Code, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore America's Original Vision. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, Bonnie in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bonnie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom, it's Bunny.
Oh, Bunny, I'm sorry.
Like Easter, Bunny.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of Keith Olbermann, he is not the lone voice in the wilderness. We also have you.
Yeah, but I'm not on MSNBC.
Well, and I'm wishing you were, because more and more and more people need to hear your rants, which is a neat segue into why I'm calling. I typically print out his special comments and send it to people that I think need to hear them and I'm sure are not watching him.
Yeah.
And likewise with you. Right before your guest, you were commenting on Bush and his recent Nazi like maneuvers and everything.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, I'm sure that that was extemporaneous. You weren't reading from anything you had written, right?
The first hour, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's too bad. I wish you had written it down and you could put it on your site and I could print it out. And
it will be on my site as a video. We videotaped that. We're sharing this stuff with Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy, who run GoLeft.tv. They've given us our own channel over there. It's the Tom TV channel, Tom Hartman channel. And you'll find dozens, I don't know, maybe 100 of my shows. I'm not sure how many, a whole bunch of my shows over there. And we're sending them typically one or two a day, sometimes a segment, sometimes an entire hour. They convert it to video and they put it up. So today's, that first hour of today's program, certainly will show up at goleft.tv. And we're really manpower short here, or woman power short in this case, because Louise is doing it. We're slowly getting the video page of tomhartman.com to contain the embeds of all of those things that are over at goleft.tv. But Louise just put on a link to our homepage, on our homepage, on today's blog at tomhartman.com, a link to a 20-minute video that I did about a year ago called When Democracy Failed, which isn't the quotes from Milton Mayer. Those will go up, but is a piece that I wrote back in 2003 when all this started. And so there's a lot of it out there and a lot of it in video and some
do
of
you
it
have,
written.
Do you have anything, though, that is, like, printed, you know, transcripts
yeah.
that I can print out and send to people?
I don't have an actual transcript of this. There are a lot of transcripts of our shows. Again, if you go to tomhartman.com, Sue Nethercutt has done a great job of transcribing many of our shows, some
what
of my very
again?
Best rants. Right at tomhartman.com, you'll see my website. However you spell my name, it'll get you there. We've got all the misspellings. And in the upper right-hand corner, there's a link that says transcripts. And you go there, and you will find transcripts of many of my rants.
Okay,
and also, the Milton Mayer stuff is in an article that I wrote that was published on December 20th, 2004 on Common Dreams, titled The Myth of National Victimhood, All Wrapped Up and Delivered for Christmas. And Louise will put a link to that on our homepage at tomhartman.com.
Okay, can I ask you one final thing that isn't
yes.
related, but kind of?
Yes.
I've loved it whenever you've gone off on all the things that are going to happen if, you know, Republicans retain control of the White House, like more and more corporatization of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, had you ever written anything saying all the things, like the post office and the library and the roads and the entire infrastructure? Because that, again,
yes.
is something that I would
You'll find the essence of that whole rant in three of my books, in Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, in Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Power and Theft of Human Rights, and in one of my favorite books, We the People, which is actually an illustrated book, but it is also very, very dense with this kind of information. So, Bunny, thanks a lot for your call, and thanks for your kind comments. Much appreciated. Carl in Seattle. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Tom. One of the things I've been noting the past couple of days I've been listening to you, I've talked to people all the time about how we're getting closer and closer to Orwell's nightmare of 1984.
Yeah.
The Bush administration is dragging us, just screaming towards it.
Oh, it's like they're following it as a handbook.
Precisely. And, you know, have you ever read Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale?
No, I have not.
I just put a link up on your blog to a wiki for a synopsis of the book. it's frighteningly parallel to 1984, talking about the collapse of the country through the religious right taking extreme control.
Interesting. You know, the good news, Carl, is that the evangelical movement, and thanks for the call, the good news is that the evangelical movement is starting to pull back from the Republicans. I see this as starting to break down and break down fast. This is the wonder of the strength of democracy in America. As much as we can be concerned or afraid or whatever, I think that we have a very, very strong nation.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Admit it or not, you can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo, look us in the eye, call us on a cell phone, tell us all why. In Dayton, Ohio, or Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin out on the great high plains. It's done closed down along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. Dust devils dance in the noonday heat. There's rats in the alley and trash in the street. Gang graffiti on a boxcar door. We can't make it here anymore.
Ah, but hope springs eternal. And from the wire services, this are, as we say, as we like to say, the wire services here. Indeed, yeah. Just moments after former presidential candidate John Edwards endorsed Senator Barack Obama for president, Senator Hillary Clinton vowed to continue the fight for Edwards' endorsement. My friends, she told supporters in Louisville, Kentucky, I will fight for the endorsement of John Edwards, even if it takes all summer. I have not yet begun to fight for his endorsement. The New York senator appeared to brush off Mr. Edwards' endorsement of Senator Obama, saying, I don't know what that has to do with anything. While Senator Clinton acknowledged that Senator Edwards made a joint appearance with Mr. Obama, Senator Obama, in which he endorsed the junior senator, she said, if you think that's going to make me give up trying to get John Edwards' endorsement, you've got another think coming. She said she was also unconcerned that Senator Edwards had recently gotten a new phone number and had not shared it with her. She said, anyone who believes I'm going to be deterred by an obstacle like that doesn't know what I'm made of. Mark my words, I'm going to get that endorsement. Clinton's aides refused to comment on her quest for Edwards' endorsement, saying they were too busy hiding copies of this week's Time magazine. Yeah. Of course, you know, tongue-in-cheek news from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. And, no, I'm not making fun of Senator Clinton. I wish her well. And I think I really do think it's great that she's taking this thing to the end, because it is dragging out the story of the Democratic Party every single day. And John McCain is receding into the background, and his time will come for us, the Democrats and progressives and independents of America, to tell the real story of John McCain. That time will come. Fact of the matter is 80-90% of Americans haven't even begun to pay attention to the political process, and they frankly won't until October. So I think this is a healthy thing, net. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, toll-free, all across the United States. Max in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Max.
Yeah, good morning. And what I'm about to bring up, I mean, this is the kind of thing would be on Letterman. It could be funny, but it's downright sick, and it's a slap in the face to the people that the president purports to love more than the rest of us. It seems that President W. is going to give up golf for the remainder of his presidency because images of him playing golf are disconcerting. I forget how the actual verbiage used, but they are disturbing to the loved ones of our fallen.
Yeah. You know where this started is Fahrenheit 9/11. Michael Moore in that movie showed Bush, setting up a shot and then saying, watch this shot. And in fact, I think I've got the audio of it.
But it's taken him 7 years to say he's giving up golf and the ridiculousness of it all. And I don't hear enough people screaming about this. This coming from the president when he was super popular – that any disagreement with him, anything at all, and you were defecating on our warriors. You were all sorts of horrible things. This guy can't be gone soon enough for me. But just because he's gone doesn't mean that the right is leaving with him, as you pointed out today, and the frightening stuff that's continuing to go on. You want to read something frightening? Read who I consider kind of a mild, I'm not sort of mild conservative writer, but read. I'm trying to think of her name now.
Well, let me give you a couple.
Kathleen Parker. Read Kathleen Parker's article in the last couple of days about red-blooded Americans. And, you know, and then think about a few things.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome, and thanks for calling and thanks for listening. Yes, absolutely. And beyond that, I would say you want to read some Republicans. Read Kevin Phillips. Any of his last three or four books. Read John Dean. John Dean has written some absolutely brilliant books about what's going on and how America has changed out from underneath him. And, you know, this all began...
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
It all began with Nixon. And the lessons of Nixon were learned very, very well by Karl Rove. I'm telling you, very well. Melvin in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Melvin.
Hi, Mel. Hi, Tom.
Hey.
You hear me?
I do. You're on the air. What's up?
Yes, I really appreciate your program. I'd like to recommend, maybe you read this book, I'd like to recommend it, The German Dictatorship.
Is that the title of the book?
Yeah, it's the title of the book, and it's a history by a well-known historian, Karl Brocker, which details the political techniques that Hitler used to get in power. But more exact, I'd like to talk about, is the fact that people don't realize that Hitler was elected democratically.
Well, yes and no. He was ultimately elected democratically. He did not have a majority of the seats. His party did not have a majority of seats in parliament. They only controlled about a third of them. And it was the bombing of the Reichstaggebäude, the parliament building, that caught. And in fact, Hitler was having dinner with Hindenburg and von Papen when that happened. And he ran over to that building and he got a bunch of radio microphones in front of him and he said, "This is a sign from God." And he said, and he declared a war on terrorism. And he used that to convince Hindenburg to appoint him chancellor. And then began the purge, you know, which led directly to the Night of the Long Knives and the whole bit.
Yes.
But he was elected, but he was not elected by a majority of the people. You could argue that the same is true of George Bush. He was put into place by the Supreme Court. But.
Well, it's true that, yeah. But, I mean, he did get in power, well, except for the Reichstag, by a democratic process. It's true that Hindenburg appointed him to
yeah, the government. But the parallels are absolutely scary, and that's that article that I wrote called When Democracy Failed, and I actually included it as a chapter in, I think, What Would Jefferson Do? And it's also a chapter in We the People, two of my books. And I think, you know, and it was based actually on William Shearer's book, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. So there's some excellent histories out there. And Melvin, I appreciate your recommendation. We do need to remember. We need to remember, right? It's conservatives. Well, Linda in Deerfield Beach, Florida. I think you want to make the point I was just about to make, and I'll let you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's you can thank you, number one, for taking my call,
sure.
And number two, I had just gotten back from Japan, and you had taken my other show's place, which I absolutely love. I think it's fantastic. And number three, your first hour guest, I hate to keep going back to him, but I guess he kind of brought up everybody's hairs this morning. I guess he kind of was a good guest because...
That was just a caller.
John, yes,
yeah.
Yeah,
he was just a caller. And
he was
but the scary thing is he speaks for so many Americans. He speaks for the 5-6 million people who listen to Michael Savage every day,
to the 10-15 million people
who listen to Rush
Limbaugh. If we could pull him away from Michael's, the Rush Limbaughs and the Michael Savages and turn him on to some good reads like, you know, like I suggested, Naomi Klein's The Shock Doctrine would explain a lot of things that he doesn't quite understand. I mean, I'm trying to give him a little more intelligence than I think he's really worth. But and I don't want to insult him because
no,
you know,
I suspect
I am a
he's not that.
I
suspect he's a smart guy. And Naomi Wolf's book, The End of America, it's only 130 pages, and it is absolutely shocking and brilliant, and it just lays it right out.
Hoping that you could pass that on to him. That maybe if he read it, he wouldn't be so thinking that we're a bunch of Nazis because we're the ones trying to stop the conservatives from doing this to us.
We're the ones who love our country and are trying to save the Constitution.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well said. Linda, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. And I guess the good news is that he's listening to the show. I got to tell you just a funny story along those lines. I'm not going to out anybody by naming the city here, but a lot of the radio stations that we're on are owned by and many of them are Clear Channel or some of them are other companies that also own conservative stations. And this one station, this is a couple of years ago, the program director called me up. He says, I got to tell you a funny story. He said, my sales manager is a arch conservative. We run Rush Limbaugh opposite you, because I've been going up opposite Rush Limbaugh for 6 years now, and have beat him in the ratings in Seattle and now in this most recent book in Portland. We beat Rush Limbaugh in the ratings, even though he's on the 50,000-watt station and we're on the 25,000-watt station. But anyhow, he says, my sales manager, he is constantly coming into my office saying, I can't believe that Hartman just said that. How can you have him on the radio when he's saying things like that? You got it. Yeah. And he just goes off on me like this about your show. And I just listen to him rant, and then he leaves. And I think to myself, huh, he's listening to Hartman. He could be listening to Limbaugh. But, you know, so this conservative is listening to my show. And more, I think what we're hearing, the reason why John called in is because more and more conservatives are starting to listen to programs like mine. And I don't want to be the only one who takes credit for this. I think that there's some very, very good progressive talk radio out there. And more conservatives are listening in, and many of them are starting to say, you know, some of them are pushing back. Some of them, they're pushing back is like by way of actually asking the question. You know, okay, here's my talking point. Prove me wrong. And you prove them wrong, and after a while, they start thinking about this. I remember back 6 years ago when we first started, when I was with IE America Radio Network, and it was me and Mike Malloy and Peter Werby and Nancy Skinner, and there was this guy in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We were on the air on KTRC, who started calling up and having fights with me on the air. I mean, just real regularly. Within a year and a half or so, he had completely turned around. And he was one of our most loyal listeners, but also had become active as a progressive with the Democratic Party. I mean, that's the kind of thing that we want to see happen in the United States, is people not, hey, leave that team and join my team. I'm sorry, I'm over it with my team, your team politics. But rather, let's wake up to the real ideals of this country. Let's look at what the Constitution really means. Let's become Americans who love our country together once again.
Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Indeed it is. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, brought to you by you, our listeners. Our listeners supporting our sponsors, supporting our affiliated radio stations. Let them know that you're listening. Let them know that you like the program. Patronize the products of our sponsors. And if you don't need to use their products this week or this month or today, let your friends know. Pass the word along. Let's make Progressive Talk Radio spectacularly successful all across the United States. And speaking of spectacularly successful Progressive Talk Radio, every Thursday we try to highlight an advertiser with one of our local radio stations that is having success. Today we have Tom Mikesell with us. Am I pronouncing it right, Tom Mikesell?
Yeah, Tom Mikesell, that's right.
There we go, Mikesell. And you are a mortgage banker with the All-American Mortgage Corporation, your website progressivemortgageplan.com. And you are advertising on WCPT in Chicago, if I have all that right.
That's great.
So our format for this is 60 seconds for you to pitch your product and 60 seconds for you to tell us about your success advertising at Progressive Talk Radio. So first, tell us about progressivemortgageplan.com.
Well, it's been great for me.
I picked that name because I wanted to advertise solely on Liberal Talk Radio, and Progressive Mortgage is kind of what I find my niche as.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're a progressive who's in the mortgage business, and you're trying to do mortgages ethically and right.
Right. My tagline is I'm liberal and I'm local, and I want to be your mortgage planner.
Wow. That is great. That is absolutely great. And you find that that's working for you.
It's working real well. I find that I'm not a great salesman, so I don't have a lot of the glitz and the glamour and the high-pressure sales. But on Liberal Talk Radio, people are looking for information, and that's what I can provide, is the most information to help folks to match them with the best rate, cost, and lender program for their situation.
Right. So you don't do gotchas and you don't do BS. You do just, you know, here's, if you need to finance your home, we can make it happen, or refi or whatever it may be, over at ProgressiveMortgagePlan.com. And Tom Mikesell, we're talking with his the All American Mortgage Corporation. How has it worked for you advertising at WCPT in Chicago?
It's been great. I consider my advertising dollar an investment in Progressive Radio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not only able to find clients that that are like-minded people like me, but my advertising dollar is an investment in this country and democracy itself.
But hopefully you're making money too.
I'm making money. It's very successful.
That's a good thing. See, if you can do well, doing good, that's wonderful. Tom Mikesell with All American Mortgage Corporation, ProgressiveMortgagePlan.com. Tom, thanks so much for dropping by and sharing
your story. You're very welcome. Can I give you my 866 number?
Sure. Go for it.
I worked long and hard on this. It's 866-WIN-N-08.
And that's the phone number for your business?
That's right. 866-946-4608. Win-N-08.
That's great. 866-WIN-N-08. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you for the time.
Great to have you on. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Bob in Santa Monica, California. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to recommend a book that seems to be on the topic of the day. It's titled Savage Symphony, if you're familiar with it or not.
I'm not.
Eva Lips. What I find particularly interesting about this book is that it's published in early 1938. It's essentially this woman's diary from 1933 to about 1937, when she and her husband subjected to the Nazi regime managed to get out of Germany. Now, these were Presbyterian, intelligentsia. He was a professor of ethnology. At the university, and director of the museum there. And it shows the insidious nature of what I think we're experiencing in this country. And I refer to that phone call about an hour or so ago that people have made reference to. The problem here is history seems to repeat itself. This was published prior to Kristallnacht, for example, and really described exactly what that administration was doing to the people of Germany, which to me is a tremendous parallel to what we're experiencing here.
Well, and let's keep in mind that Hitler wasn't the only one doing this, that Mussolini was doing it in Italy,
absolutely,
that Franco was doing it in Spain,
and
they didn't, end up with mass genocides like Hitler did. We can say we're concerned about the rise of fascism and the loss of freedoms without saying, and therefore, it's going to become as bad as Nazi Germany.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it's insidious in its nature, and as Mussolini said, keep the people ignorant. And when you... when your caller earlier said something about book burning, we may not be burning books yet, but look at Valerie Plame's book, which is half redacted. Kudos to the publisher for publishing that.
There you go. The Bush administration essentially pre-burning the book. Bob, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. And I've written down Savage Symphony. I'll look for it. Jason in Grand Rapids. We got about a minute before we got to wrap up this hour, Jason. Listening to WTKG. What's up?
Yeah, hey, just that the gentleman from Ohio, he basically missed the point as far as public education, because it missed him in terms of, I guess, the environment and intellectuals, unions, for instance, you know, as if police don't need them, things of that nature, and the misinformation that, you know, stems from that misunderstanding
There's a mind-boggling amount of that misinformation out there, I'll tell you. I'm a talk radio junkie. I listen to progressive talk radio. I listen to conservative talk radio. I listen to talk radio all over the place. And in many parts of the country as I'm driving around, all I can get is conservative talk radio. And the misinformation, the distortions, are sometimes really and truly mind-boggling. We'll continue this discussion and what's going on in the news. We'll be picking up some of the best of the rest of the news. And, of course, our contest. Check out TomHartmann.com. Who's going to write the best blog entry today at TomHartmann.com? When we come back to the news at the top of the hour. And then Rick Noriega taking our country back at 20 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative con. This is the Tom Hartmann Program. Zone with Tom Hartmann. This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Well, yesterday, the Secretary of Defense, the guy who replaced Don Rumsfeld, Mr. Gates, said, we need to engage Iran. In other words, we should have discussions with Iran. Today, George W. Bush, speaking before the Knesset in Israel, said anybody who does have conversations with Iran is participating in appeasement. John McCain rushed right out and said, yep, that's right, he agrees, as did Joe Lieberman. Absolutely incredible. Okay, who's the appeaser, Bush or his Secretary of Defense? Amazing. Speaking of war, issues of war and peace, we're certainly seeing more than our share of wars around the world. And every now and then it's interesting to pull back the curtain and see, you know, behind the curtain at how it all works. Joseph Farah and Stephen Braun have written a brilliant book, the Washington Post Best Book of the Year. It's titled Merchant of Death, Money, Guns, Planes, and the Man Who Makes It Possible. Douglas Farah, former West Indian Bureau Chief for the Washington Post. He's the author of Blood from Stones, The Secret Financial Network of Terror. The guy who broke the story about the association between blood diamonds and Al-Qaeda, something I think probably my friend Leo DiCaprio would be very interested in, and having made a movie about that. And Stephen Braun is a public Pulitzer Prize-winning national correspondent for the L.A. Times. Douglas Farah is with us. Hey, Douglas.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Who is this man who makes – how can one single guy have so much influence – first of all, who is he, and how can he have so much influence on the international weapons trade that it actually stirs up wars?
Well, it's a fascinating combination of personality and historical events coming together to allow this particular individual, whose name is Victor Boot. He's a young Russian. He's currently only 41 years old. When he began, he was in his mid-20s, to gain the prominence he did. He had the foresight to see that as the Soviet Union fell apart, there were two things that were left that he had access to, he could essentially steal. One was aircraft. There are thousands of aircraft abandoned across the former Soviet bloc that he simply started flying out of the country. And weapons. There are still clients for the Soviet weapons. He was out of the Soviet intelligence services, the military intelligence services, had access into those arsenals and simply built up this booming trade in weapons that allowed low-grade wars that were lingering in Liberia and Sierra Leone to erupt into much more violent, much more lethal conflicts.
And is there actually a check and balance kind of system for this? I mean, here you've got a guy who basically was an entrepreneur. I mean, you know, he was
an entrepreneur. He saw what was out there on the horizon, which other people didn't see, and he had the backing of and the protection of a significant players in the what became the Russian military intelligence service, formerly the Soviet Russian intelligence service, who was able to operate with impunity. And he pioneered essentially the door-to-door delivery of weapons. He became sort of the one-stop shop. He could get you your end-user certificates to make everything look legal. He could take payment in diamonds or timber or cobalt. He didn't need cash on the barrelhead. He would take whatever you had to pay him with. And he began flying to these conflicts that were desperate for weapons, and he actually supplied multiple sides of the same war on numerous occasions, which makes it even more astounding.
What's his status right now?
He was arrested last month in Thailand in a sting operation run by the Drug Enforcement Administration here. So he's in a maximum security prison in Thailand awaiting extradition to the United States to stand trial.
Oh, that seems like the one bit of good news in all of this.
It's the one bit of good news. The bad news is they thought they'd have him over here a long time ago, and the Russians have engaged in multiple diplomatic and legal challenges to the extradition request, and it's not clear how ultimately it will play out in Thailand.
Perhaps the larger issue is the way that we tend to think that if we get rid of one bad guy that we've got rid of the problem. For example, Enron went down in flames. But Enron's nefarious activities were the result of the piece of legislation passed that's sometimes referred to as the Enron exemption, or actually a change in SEC rules that had to be approved by the Clinton administration in 97, I think it was. And that Enron exemption is still in place. Other commodity traders are using it right now. I mean, there are other Enrons being developed. In fact, there are some people who speculate that much of the explosion in the price of commodities, particularly food, oil, and gold, is the result of people using the Enron exemption. So Enron is still with us.
Right.
Is there a check and balance against the behavior of this guy, some sort of institutional, whether it's the United Nations or whether it's individual nations that have the ability to go after it, is there any kind of institutional or national way or paranational or whatever the word would be, international, I guess, way of stopping this kind of thing?
The short answer is no. There are no international mechanisms to deal with people who do what Victor Boot did. In fact,
so with him gone, there's a vacuum that somebody's probably filling right now.
There's no question the vacuum will be filled. I would argue that at least in the short to midterm, it'll be a less efficient delivery of weapons and probably cost the purchasers more. But yes, no, the vacuum will be filled. There's no international mechanism. And what stunned me in doing the book was that most of what Victor Boot did was not illegal. There's very little you could try him on simply because no laws were broken. He violated UN arms embargoes, and when that happens, the UN says, you're a bad person, and please don't do it again, and that's the sanction.
Right. 2 months ago, I was in southern Sudan on the border with Darfur. We were in a huge refugee camp at Gok Machar. It was originally a small community of 8,000 people with one well. There's now 45,000 people there, and more were arriving every single day while we were there. 300 miles from the nearest road, the nearest electricity, we had to get in by and out by air. And we came in with a couple of tons of food. And the stories that the refugees were telling us from Darfur and from the northern parts of southern Sudan were stories, these horrific stories of murder and rape and mayhem and whatnot. But one of the threads that was fairly consistent through it was that the people doing this, in large part the government of northern Sudan or the official government of Sudan, and some of the so-called rebel groups like the Janjaweed were using Chinese weapons, that the Chinese had stepped in and they were supplying the weapons to these people. Now the Chinese are also exporting oil from southern Sudan and paying the north for it, not the south. I mean, it gets very messy, but the bottom line is it's from what I saw in Africa 2 months ago, or in this part of Africa, and I've heard stories from other parts of Africa that are not dissimilar, the Chinese now, or at least Chinese entrepreneurs, are starting to fill these holes that fill this vacuum that was left by the arrest of this Russian.
No, I think that that's absolutely right. And the Chinese have this great capacity to deal on a state-to-state level and offer inducements to buy their weapons. And the beauty from the purchaser's point of view is that they're all AK-47s. They're all Kalashnikovs, basically. And North Korea makes them, China makes them, Russia makes them, Georgia makes them. You know, you can get them any number of places, and they're all essentially interchangeable. So you have the same parts and the same ammunition no matter where they're coming from. But there's no question that China has no hesitancy in stepping in. They tend to deal more with governments. Victor Boot tended to deal more with non-state actors, but they're certainly willing, and they offer one of the advantages that Victor Boot did, and that is that they don't need cash. They will trade you for your commodities that you have on hand.
Right, in this case, oil.
In this case, oil. In other cases, diamond and bauxite in Guinea and elsewhere. And so, and they also have no laws governing the ability to pay officials what we would call bribes, or they would call, I guess, business inducements. And so, yes, they're stepping in a huge way and fueling conflicts that are incredibly lethal, as you saw.
We have created a group of non-state actors, Blackwater and other similar companies here in the United States, inserted them into the Iraq conflict in a very, very big way, given them essentially sovereign immunity. Both from prosecution by the U.S. government and the Iraqi government for their behavior in those conflicts. And for that matter, now Blackwater was patrolling New Orleans after the flood. To what extent is the international arms trade and the international business of war shifting away from state actors, where there may be at least the power of the U.N. if not regulate or stop it, highlight it, and moving to non-state actors?
I think it's one of the great shifts of the 21st century that's gone largely unnoticed and unanalyzed in how we conduct war and how war is being conducted.
Isn't this incredibly dangerous?
It is incredibly dangerous, and what we're seeing now more and more, you have the KBRs and the DynCorps and those groups that rely on state funding for their activities, but you also see a growing number of non-state actors that are self-financing through either the diamond trade or the FARC in Colombia through cocaine. There are no outside mechanisms to control those conflicts, and if you'll recall, during the Cold War, the United States and the Soviet Union could tell their proxies to knock it off. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah, that's right. DouglasFerrah.com, Merchant of Death. Book.com, the websites, the book Merchant of Death, Money, Guns, Planes, and the Man Who Makes War Possible, Douglas Farah. Douglas, thank you for dropping by today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And for the great work that you've done in highlighting this issue. This is serious stuff.
Thank
16
you.
Minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
Mussolini, Goose. Those of you who read Cracking the Code, you know, I opened the book with the story of Mussolini, who's this crazed goose who 3 years ago, when we first moved here to Portland and bought a house that's in the river, this goose took up residence on our back porch and wouldn't let me out. At first I thought he was just nuts, and then later discovered that his partner had a nest on the house next door to us and was sitting on some eggs, and that's what he was all about. And those eggs, I told you, those this year, yeah, Mussolini comes back every year, and this year he and his mate hatched 5 eggs, and on Pam's deck next door to us, and he was floating around the river with 5 little geese, you know, as I shared with you. Well, day before yesterday, Louise and I were walking through the park, and here's Mussolini and his partner with 14 baby chicks, 14 goslings. And some of them were small and some of them were large, and it's obvious that they weren't all his. There were 5 that were the same size, that were the original. Actually, it's down to 4. I think a hawk got one of them, or an eagle. But there's 14 of them now. And there's a whole bunch of other geese that were just sitting around grazing in the park, eating the grass and whatnot. So I think that, and I don't know if this has to do with the currents, because we're experiencing a La Nina here. It's been very, very cold here in Oregon, unusually cold. In fact, summer really is beginning today, I guess. Today is going to be the first day it gets up to 80 or 90, today and tomorrow. So many of the geese that normally will have 15, 20, 30 little goslings floating around in the river behind our house, and so far the only ones we've seen are Mussolini's, but he's managed to gather up some others, and it's interesting. I've got to do my studying now on goose habits. Last year, actually, there was one group, a large group of goslings, and one male and several females with the goslings. I guess they were members of Warren Jeffs' sect. They joined the fundamentalist Latter-day Saint Church. But This year, it's just Guiccolini and his partner and his mate. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Chuck in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening to WTKG. Hey, Chuck.
Yeah, Tom, I want to make a comment. Apparently, President Bush and many of his supporters have forgotten, I believe it was about a year and a half ago now, when the big news out of Iraq was the Sunni leaders who formerly were shooting at our soldiers finally realized, you know what, maybe this is counterproductive. Let's put our efforts on Al-Qaeda. And they talked with our military and worked with our military, and this was hailed by General Petraeus as a great development in the war, and I think that was the Anbar province. So I guess we're forgetting that they've talked with people who were our enemies.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's no shortage in American history of times when we've talked with our enemies, and it's been a good and productive thing. Chuck, thanks a lot for reminding me of that. Gene in Napa, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Gene.
Hi, Tom. I agree that Bush isn't a statesman, but I think his motivation is that he doesn't desire to be a statesman because he's part of the oligarchy. He serves the oligarchy, and the oligarchy's goal is to maintain an endless money stream from perpetual war for their continued profit.
Yeah. And when we talk about the oligarchy, I think it's important to draw some distinctions because, for example, John Kennedy, Franklin Roosevelt, and Teddy Roosevelt all came from families of great wealth. But in the case of John Kennedy, certainly, and I know a fair amount about the history of the family, the Kennedy family, Joe Kennedy, and in particular Rose Kennedy, John's mother, were very, very clear, emphatic, whatever the word is, about teaching their children about noblesse oblige, the Latin for the obligation of nobility, that if you are born with much, then you have an obligation equal to that much, and you have a great obligation to others who aren't born with as much. And they inculcated in their children, and you saw it right across the board. I mean, so many of them going into politics, and the girls in the family who didn't go into politics going into social work and nonprofit causes. Right across the board, all of their children, I believe all of their children, there might be one that I'm missing, basically served others. And I don't think that Barbara Bush, I think perhaps George Herbert Walker Bush understood the sense of noblesse oblige, and I think that he got that from his father, Prescott. But I'm not sure that he played much of a role in raising George. He was out of the country much of the time, and I don't think that Barbara ever got it. I mean, Barbara Bush's comment about the folks in New Orleans, I think just, so says it, or so said it. And
that was the lowest.
Yeah.
But I think Nixon also served the oligarchy. You mentioned that he courted China, but my understanding was that he and Kissinger courted China to triangulate against India's democracy.
Well, and also on behalf of Pepsi-Cola.
Supporting dictators again.
Yeah, and also on behalf of a corporation, Pepsi-Cola. I mean, that's the untold story of that Nixon was basically a salesman. Gene, thanks. Good point. Here, Barbara Bush.
And so many of the people in the arenas here, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
Yeah, it's just working very well for them. See, that is not a sense of we're all in this together. That's the oligarchy looking down their nose. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the Chinese. You blew the budget and you bounced out.
Yes, Yes, indeed. Taking our country back. One congressional district at a time, one senatorial seat at a time, one state at a time, one drain commissioner office, whatever it may be. Today, one of the greatest possibilities here. Senator John Cornyn, the toxic Republican from Texas in the United States Senate, is encountering a really serious challenge in the form of Colonel Rick Noriega, served in both the armed forces and in public office. His website, Rick Noriega, RickNoriega.com. And Colonel Noriega, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Great to have you with us. And we're, as we head up to the election here on a regular basis, having political candidates on that people should be supporting, even if they're not in Texas, even if they're not in your district. Go check out your website and see how they can support you, whether it's financially or in other ways, over at RickNoriega.com. Colonel, tell us, first of all, your political and well, just in general, your background. Let our listeners know a little bit about you.
Well, we've served 27 years in the reserves and the Texas military forces, and started out as a private and working our way up to the rank of lieutenant colonel. I spent 5 terms or 10 years in the Texas House of Representatives and 15 years in private industry, my full-time job in the area of economic development. And we've worked both with Democrats and Republicans and have been successful in getting things done for our legislative district. And I think Texans are ready for a United States senator that's going to represent the working families of Texas and not the special interests of Washington, D.C.
What are the areas that significantly differentiate you from Senator John Cornyn, the guy that you're going up against?
Well, I mean, I think just public policy background-wise, we're able to get things done working with both sides. I think that we bring a unique perspective, obviously, having served a tour overseas in Afghanistan, having served a tour on the Texas-Mexico border, having the privilege of leading men and women in uniform who are the finest in the world, and also understanding what it's like to be able to or try to drive to work at $4 a gallon, or try to take your kid to the doctor when health care costs are so crazy and out of control, and yeah, being able to empathize with what middle-class America is faced with today and that are getting squeezed each and every day. We've just got to have somebody in Washington that represents those families and not just the special interest of Washington.
We're talking with Colonel Rick Noriega, RickNoriega.com, his website. He is the Democratic nominee for the United States Senate in the state of Texas, who will be taking on Senator John Cornyn in the general election this fall. Rick, some specifics. Let's talk some issues. What are the specific issues that differentiate you from Senator Cornyn?
Well, first and foremost, I think we've always been a leader, and Mr. Cornyn has shown through his years of service to be a follower 95% of the time, voting with the administration in Washington, D.C. And I believe that it's time that we get our men and women out of Iraq as quickly and as safely as possible. From that, we recognize that the monies that are being spent on a credit card, that we're going to pass that debt on to our kids and grandkids, is irresponsible, and that we should be investing here at home in just the basic things of health care, education, and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And understanding that though that is what the needs are of our state, and having someone in D.C. that's out of touch just needs to, I guess as Donald Trump would have say it much better than I could.
Yeah. In other words, somebody needs to say to John Cornyn, you're fired.
I think each and every day we have men and women here in the state of Texas that have to go through a job review process. Yeah. And at the end of each year, whether they've performed or not performed, they are evaluated. And I believe that the same should be true for a sitting United States senator that has so abysmally represented our great state.
I agree. And thank you so much for dropping by. Rick Noriega, Noriega.com is the website, Colonel Rick Noriega. And he is going to be taking on Senator John Cornyn in Texas, and a good man worthy of your support. Colonel, thank you so much for dropping by.
Thank you, Tom. Look forward to visiting again.
Thank you. Good talking with you. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Cassandra in Hollywood. Hey, the California Supreme Court just ruled.
Isn't this exciting? California has overturned the ban on gay marriage.
Now, in the meantime, the conservatives are trying to get 1.3 million signatures on a petition to put this into the Constitution, apparently, so that the Supreme Court can't overturn it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but and I guess that's the bad news.
Yeah,
the good news,
they're aiming for that in November.
But then the good news is that Governor Schwarzenegger has said that he won't support that. But then the bad news is that the Republicans don't really think of him as a Republican anyway, at least half the time, and so it probably won't matter.
There was some story on the local news here today that he was seen driving away from some event yesterday with an Obama sticker on his car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wonder if it was his wife's car.
It probably was, but, you know, they're all up in arms about that here in L.A.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I think it's an absolutely wonderful thing that the Supreme
Court... I am so proud. I'm an old, straight, married lady, but I am so proud of us right now. I have hope. I'm an eternal optimist, and I just have hope that we will continue to uphold this ban.
Well, and I think one of the really important things about it was the rationale that the state Supreme Court used, which was that times have changed.
Yeah.
Basically. I mean, you know, that whatever the language may be or may have been, you know, whether it was intended originally to simply, give rights to men or women or people of color or not of color or whatever, that times have changed and we've figured out that gay people are part of all of us too.
Right.
And that it's not, this is not some strange choice that people make. This is how people are. And discrimination is wrong. And,
right.
I mean, it was a wonderful Supreme Court decision.
Yeah. Congratulations to my brothers and sisters on the step forward. I mean, I just can't even tell you. I spent most of my young life in San Francisco, and I'm so happy for people that are going to take this opportunity to get married if that's what they want. And then I have straight friends. I have a friend who's going to be an Obama delegate in Denver, and her name is Jane, and her husband is Gary, and they have been wearing their wedding rings on their right hand in solidarity with gay couples who haven't had rights. And I want to tell them, if they're listening, to move those rings over to their left hand.
There you go. Well, so see, now it's time to codify this in law in a way that cannot be removed by the crazy. He's on the right.
And
Cassandra
needs to vote if they're in support of this. So that and don't sign those. You know, don't sign those petitions in front of the grocery stores here.
There you go.
Used to believe in signing all of those things. I don't do them anymore.
There you go. Cassandra, I got to move along. But thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. And yes, amen, amen. Phil in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hey, Phil, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I love your show, and I'm a big fan. I only call when I disagree with stuff. So, I've heard you use this phrase a lot, bashing libertarians, saying that they're just Republicans who want to smoke dope and get laid.
Yeah, that's I think that's actually a very good description of libertarians,
I
don't mean it as a put down. Well, actually, I do mean it as a put down, but
I would like to ask you to stop using inflammatory language like that, because libertarians, I mean, for the most part, they have a lot in common with liberals on the left in some areas, and there's so many new converts to that movement that are getting involved in politics.
There's so many new movements to that converts to that movement, Phil, because people don't understand libertarianism, and I'm guessing maybe you're one of them. You realize that the libertarian philosophy, and you know, from the Cato Institute forward, is that the major decisions in our country and the major aspects of our lives, the things that affect all of us, the quality of our water, the quality of our air, the quality of our, you know, the availability of electricity, the quality of our food supply, should be 100% in the hands of private for-profit corporations.
No, I'm totally with you on that, and that's where I...
That is so wrong. I mean, that is so fundamentally anti-American, and that is the core of libertarianism, is that there is no such thing as the commons beyond the defense.
They're also high advocates of states' rights, and I've, you know, I read the Anti-Federalist Papers when I was in college, and...
Yeah.
And I was really inspired by that, you know, to keep a smaller federal government. And I think.
But see, here's the problem with that, Phil. We had a weak federal government and strong states right up until the Civil War. And what it produced was the Civil War. After the Civil War, with the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, the federal government took on powers that it didn't have before, and these were ratified by all the states. It wasn't like, you know, some president said, hey, I'm going to do this. These were ratified by the states, and we now have a strong federal government and relatively strong but slightly weaker state governments, and it has kept the union together. There are many things. West Virginia, for example, doesn't have any major cities in it. There are, on the other hand, you've got New York City up there. You got New York that's producing enormous amounts of wealth. If you wanted to have good education systems, if you want to have good public health systems, and you're going to say, as the libertarians do, no, it should be 100% entirely up to the states, West Virginia is going to get screwed no matter how hard they try, and New York's going to make out like bandits.
See, in a perfect world, I would say, you know, the libertarians should take back the Republican Party, and that the Greens should take over the Democratic Party, and then
well, you'd certainly
have a debate, you know?
Yeah, you'd certainly have the two extremes then, interesting. Phil, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. And call some other time when we have a little more time. I love to debate libertarianism. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Says what he wants to say. Used to be a day when I played what I wanted to play back in 68, 69 when I started doing music radio. Ah, those were the days. Ellen Rutter on the line with us for the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Oh, hang on just a second, Ellen. First, I'm sorry. We have a contest, and we have a winner in our contest. We're giving away a copy of my new book, Cracking the Code, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore America's Original Vision, an autographed copy, to the person who wrote Sean's favorite, Sean Taylor, our producer here, our executive producer with our program, who wrote Sean's favorite blog posting at TomHartman.com. Sean?
Thank you, Tom. I know we're all excited to get to Ellen, so this one is short and sweet. Submitted by Math Boy says, so I expect that McCain will refuse to debate the Democratic candidate for president since talking to your enemy is appeasement.
Ha! That's great.
Well put.
Great. Thank you. And again, it was...
Math Boy.
Math Boy. Congratulations, Math Boy. Good on you. You win the prize. So, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Hey, Ellen.
Just what we were talking about, the president's speech today
at
the Knesset, and I don't know if you've been talking about it, but...
boy, have we.
I mean, it is, it's pretty amazing. And what's interesting, of course, is that Obama came right out after him on this.
Yeah.
And, was.
Well, but see, Secretary Rice and Secretary Gates, his Secretary of State and his Secretary of Defense, have both called for direct contact with Iran. And here's Bush saying this. What is he saying? That his own administration are appeasers? I mean, you know, Joe Biden came out and he called this, you know, BS. I mean, he actually spelled out the word in a news conference. And it is. I mean, this is amazing.
Well, you know what's so interesting is, as you know, former Congressman Bob May went to jail, and I think it was over the Iran issue. But the Bureau of Prisons, even though he's got freedom of speech, will not allow him to report on the air. And one can only wonder, and he's working for us full time, why they won't allow him to be on the air. He's the only member of Congress who ever spoke Farsi, and of course, I think, pretty much knows the score.
Yeah, somebody who speaks Farsi, for those who don't know, Farsi is the language that they speak in Iran. And they are not Arabs, they are Persians, and I think you know all these subtleties are lost on most Americans, unfortunately.
Right. And it's also interesting that today that they said that Obama said that the president basically used this speech for political reasons. And you know, as I said to somebody this morning, we were taught when we were growing up in school that politics should end at the water's edge, but not with this president.
Yeah, politics should end at the water's edge. I remember that. That was like Who said that? That was it was some old famous saying, you know.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that was that, you know, from the Eisenhower administration. Everybody always, this is incredible. These guys, Bush will turn anything into politics. I mean, just absolutely anything.
And we really need a president, no matter who it is, that doesn't do that. A couple other things today, speaking of Ohio, by the way, in Ohio, gas prices have reached almost $4. In Newark, Ohio, I think they're $3, close to $3.80 a gallon. And so the, today, McCain was in Ohio, is in Columbus, Ohio, and he gave a speech. I don't know if you ever saw that Ken Keniston, who wrote, he was a professor at Yale, and in the 60s he wrote a book called Young Radicals. He also wrote a very interesting piece, which is not known. Someday, I think when I see you next week, I'll bring it out to you, called How Mental Health Stamped Out the Riots. And it was sort of a satirical piece. But one of them is that he sort of has this, he wakes up and has this vision. Well, McCain gave this speech today, and it was sort of his vision. He starts out with, by January 2013, Americans will have welcomed most of the service women home. And then he goes on to this sort of grand vision of America that doesn't have any relationship to any reality or how he's going to get there.
Well,
I mean, he talks about the economy, and he's saying tax reform and free trade are the centerpiece of his agenda. He said a reduction in corporate tax rates from the second highest in the world to one par with our trading partners. And he goes on and on about how the world is going to be.
Yeah.
It was just a very strange speech.
Well, this is how Republicans have to run these days, Ellen, is either by using attacks, you know, God, gays, guns, racial slurs, those kinds of things, gender slurs, either by attacks or by generalities. Because when you get to the specifics, the American people are not with the Republican Party. They're just not there.
Well, they've lost three elections in a row, and people are pretty spooked out. One of the things he also said is that new trade agreement, again, his vision of 2013, new free trade agreements have been ratified and led to substantial increases in exports and imports. And then he goes on and all about growth in America and South America. I mean, it's a lovely speech if you want a vision.
Well, that's what he's trying to do. By the way, Louise just handed me this. Harry Truman was the guy who said it, and here's his exact quote: "Partisanship must end at the water's edge." Harry Truman.
Good for Harry Truman. Speaking of,
good for you for remembering.
Learning about it in school. Yeah. One last thing: the gay marriage California ruling, which just came through at 1 o'clock Eastern, saying essentially that gay marriage could be allowed. Now they're trying to do a referendum in California, and the question is: will they try and use that to toss the election? I don't think it's going to work. The Secretary of State is going to decide whether there are enough signatures or not, but that's certainly what they're up to.
Well, and the referendum will have two purposes. One is to try and roll back the Supreme Court decision. The other is to try and get the Republicans to come to the vote, right?
That's exactly what they're going to try and do.
Yeah. Ellen Radner, TalkRadioNews.com. Looking forward to seeing you next Tuesday here in Portland, Ellen.
You got it.
I am really, really, truly looking forward to seeing you again. I've missed you since we were together in Darfur. TalkRadioNews.com. Thank you. Senator Bernie Sanders tomorrow joins us for our weekly Brunch with Bernie, plus Anything Goes Friday, and I'll be broadcasting live from Chicago. So we will see you tomorrow, there and then. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.